morning to introduce Rav Chaim Cohen, associate rabbi of the congregation of Beth Abraham, who many of you know, to speak to us about an important process that needs to take place every single year before Pesach. We understand, we know the concept of getting rid of chametz. We have to clear our houses of anything that could be chametz. But the reality is that that's not so simple. And there's a process that we go through, the mechira process, that really what ends up happening is that some of the people go, oh, I'm going to sell my chametz to the rabbi. Not really what happens. And today you'll hear about the process and you'll get to experience the process. Because every single year, I ask one of the rabbanim on behalf of our yeshiva to sell our chametz. There is plenty of chametz here in our building. We'll talk about what that is a little bit later. I'll let you guess how much money is estimated within our building right now in terms of chametz. But the process that we go through in order to get rid of the chametz is a very, very important one. Often people just go, they fill out a form of the rabbi, they don't really understand what's going on, why we're doing it, and how we're doing it. And it's good for us to hear this morning from Tom Cohen, to hear about that process, and really understand the hashkafa behind the care of chametz. Please stand.
Wow, such a treat to be here. My name is Tanchum Cohen. A lot of familiar faces, Baruch Hashem, in the audience. A number of fellows who I'm looking forward to meeting in the future. And Yom Tov is upon us, and I wanted to spend the time together talking about the what, the how, and the why of selling chametz. You know and I know that Hashem tells us in the Torah, you can't eat chametz over the course of Pesach. All year long we're eating chametz. How many of you ate chametz this morning? So few. How many of you ate chametz this morning? Fantastic. How many of you plan to eat chametz for breakfast in a week from now? That's concerning, because a week from now, it's going to be Pesach. And the Torah tells us, Parshas Bo, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, tell the Jewish people, there is no eating chametz over the course of the week of Pesach. And then Hashem tells Moshe, tells the Jewish people, not only do you not eat chametz, eating chametz is such an issue, we'll have to figure out why. Hashem doesn't even want us to own chametz. Lo yira'eh, lo yimatzeh. Chametz does not belong in your ownership over the course of Pesach. You can't eat it, you can't own it. So for thousands of years, you know what Jews did before Pesach? You destroy it all. You eat it up. You'll be eating your chametz. On the morning of Erev Pesach, you make a bonfire. Shkoyach. And you burn whatever chametz is left. We still do that. But with a twist. We're still busy eating our chametz. And we're still going to be busy Wednesday morning making a bonfire or borrowing someone else's bonfire and burning the last bits of our chametz. Be your chametz. But there's a twist. Because for thousands of years, no one had refrigerators. Your chametz didn't last long anyways. Whatever you had, you ate up, you finished up, you burned up the last couple pieces of chametz, and that was that. Two things happened. The second thing that happened to change things is that we now have refrigerators and freezers and loads of chametz that can last for weeks, and we have a house full of chametz. The first thing that happened a couple hundred years ago, is that the dukes and barons throughout Eastern Europe decided that they wanted Jews to be the ones to be selling whiskey, to be selling liquor in their countries. Apparently they trusted that Jews didn't do much drinking liquor or whiskey, so they could be trusted to just sell it and not drink it. Whiskey was the first chametz a few hundred years ago that lasted for a long time. You can have a bottle, it's expensive, and it lasts for a long time. So you have a Jew whose business is selling whiskey, selling liquor to the non-Jews all year long, he has thousands of dollars of chametz. So he could either just pour it out, get rid of it, or do mechiras chametz. The first mechiras chametz was Jews who owned liquor that all year long they sold by the cup to non-Jews. Came Erev Pesach, they sold the whole cask, the whole barrel. They sold the whole cellar. Nowadays, we have lots of chametz that last. We have refrigerators, we have pantries, we have loads of chametz in our house, Cheerios and bread and bagels and everything else. So there are plenty of Jews. Plenty of Jews who want to sell their chametz to a non-Jew over the course of Pesach. I'll sell it to him before Pesach. I'll buy it back, if he's interested, after Pesach. Over the course of Pesach, it's not mine. Not only I don't eat it, I'm not going to own it either. So as Rabbi Price mentioned, you may have heard your dad or your mom saying, I'm going to shul to sell the chametz to the rabbi. So I have news for you. Rabbis are Jews too. I'm also Jewish. I don't want to own chametz over Pesach either. I have to get rid of my own chametz. I certainly don't want to own all of your chametz. I'm not buying your chametz. You're about to see step one and step two. Step one is what happens in shul. Maybe if it hasn't happened yet, you can come with your father, come with your mother, come with your uncle, come with your aunt, come to shul and watch what happens step one between an individual Jew and the rabbi. And we're going to do that. You're going to see that soon in real life, because in just a couple of minutes, Rabbi Price is going to not sell Y&J's chametz to me, but he's going to do the first step of the handoff. And then there's step two, which happens on Erev Pesach, where Rabbanim, empowered by hundreds of Jews, please sell my chametz for me, sit down with a non-Jew and actually sell the chametz. And for that, you're going to get to watch that also. I have a couple of Talmidim here, proud alumni of Y&J, are now Talmidim of Y&J, the 12th grade, Beis Medrash Cotton at MTA at YU. And one of them did a fantastic job. One of the old traditions we have in my shir for the last almost 20 years is Purim guys come over, we have a Purim masiba, and we have a Purim spiel. And there's a long line of fellows who have had the guts to imitate me to my face, some very well. You're going to meet one of the best right now. His name is Benny Cohn. And in just a few minutes, he's going to come up and play Christopher Smith. Our friendly non-Jew is going to buy the chametz, your chametz, through me to him. So let's talk about what you're about to see. The first thing that happens is an individual Jew comes to the rabbi and says, I'm not going to meet Christopher Smith, but you will. So I want you to be my agent. I want you to be my shliach. You're going to act on my behalf. And Price, are we ready?
Ready.
Fantastic. So typically what happens... I need some papers, and I need my trusty handkerchief. So typically what happens is, here are two forms. On this form is a long list of names. At the top it says that anyone who signed his name is saying, I want you, Rabbi so-and-so, act on my behalf, sell my chametz to Christopher Brown. Sell my chametz to the non-Jew come Erev Pesach. That's what it says right here. It's an individual Jew's intent to sell the chametz, and for a few reasons, not only do we sell the chametz, we also want to rent. You can't leave the chametz all over your house, because not only can't I own chametz, I can't have a non-Jew's chametz just sort of sitting on my table. What would happen if Christopher's chametz was on my table on Pesach? What might happen? What might happen is this chametz on the table. What do people do when they see food? Yeah, they eat it. They eat it, exactly. So even if I don't own the chametz, it has to be locked up. It has to be in the non-Jew's area. So if for one reason, we'll get to another one soon, in preparation at home for Mechiras chametz, you can take whatever chametz you're planning to sell to the non-Jew, and it goes in marked cabinets. It goes in marked shelves in the fridge or freezer. It goes in a designated spot. So when Rabbi Price puts his John Hancock, Rabbi Price signs on the line on this form, he's saying that on behalf of Y&J, he's interested in selling all the chametz that belongs to Y&J. We'll find out soon how much chametz that is. All the chametz that belongs to Y&J, he's interested in selling to the non-Jew that we'll be meeting next week in Erev Pesach. Plus, He's interested in renting the closets where it is, the space where it's located, to that non-Jew as well. So Rabbi Price, can I ask you to please, on behalf of ONJ?
Thank you.
And then, while Rabbi Price signs that, here's form number two, which he already filled out. Form number two, you see on top, it says in big letters, so big maybe even the fellows in the back can read it. Can you? This is not a vision test. No? Not that big. Power of attorney. Power of attorney. That means that on the first form on a price road, I want to sell the chametz to the non-Jew. I want to lease the areas where the chametz is to the non-Jew. On the second form, he's saying, I'm not going to be there myself. Rabbi, I want you to be my shliach. I'm giving you power of attorney. I'm giving you the power to act on my behalf. So he's going to write down where the chametz, the address is, chametz, he may have chametz at work, and he's going to sign on the dotted line. And to make it clear that this is where we mean this for real, so every single person who fills this out, both on this pink form, this list, and on his own power of attorney, he's going to write down not only his name, his address, but where the chametz is located and how much the chametz costs. Can I read the number?
Well, let me guess. Guys, how much chametz do you, the value of the chametz in the yeshiva right now? $3,000? Okay, good. So I heard. So the numbers that I heard initially, I heard 3,000, 7,000, 5,000. The exact number is $2,032.
Wow. But there's still a puzzle piece missing. So it's very nice that Price wants to sell his chametz. He wrote down the pink sheet. He's on the list, intent to sell the chametz, to lease the space where chametz is located. And he even filled out a sheet, a form, and he signed it. And he wants me to do that for him, to act on his behalf, to be his shaliach, his morsha. But what else has to happen to plug it in? To make it clear that I am empowered. Yeah.
You have to, like, give someone
information. Oh, yeah, what do you say? Oh, good. We're going to call up the non-Jew in just a minute. Fantastic. We're going to finish step one. We'll get to step two. Yes. Pay no attention to the last name. So the truth is, the main thing is, Rabbi Price said, I want you to be my shliach. Anyone here learn Maseches Kiddushin? Maseches Kiddushin. Okay, wow.
A lot of guys in
Mishnayis. Second parak? Second parak in Maseches Kiddushin? Second parak talks about kingdom and talks about shaliach. I don't recommend sending someone else to get married in your behalf. You should show up yourself. But selling chametz is okay to have someone show up in your behalf. How do you make a shliach? So Rabbi Price really could just tell me he wants you to be a shliach, but there's a very old minhag. It's older than you, it's older than me, it's older than all the rabbeim in this room put together. Because the Rambam, 800-900 years ago, tells us this is an old minhag. Then it was an old minhag. This minhag is well over 1,000 years old. That when a Jew wants to make another Jew his agent, his shliach, you'll do it for me. Not only does he say it, but he does something, a formal act of kinyan to show I really mean this. We call it a kinyan suda. You know, let's say, what's a kinyan suda? So let's say you have a really nice sweatshirt here. And imagine that Mr. Rothwax liked my tie, and I like Mr. Rothwax's sweatshirt. So we could do a swap, right? I give him the tie, he gives me the sweatshirt, and we're good. We call that chalipin. Like, this is worth, and that's worth, and we're swapping. There's another type of swap called a kinyan suder. This handkerchief is not worth nearly as much as all the chametz we're talking about, but it's a way, it's just a way of showing I mean it. So what I'm going to do, Price, so on this form you express your intent to sell the chametz,
yes,
on behalf of ONJ, and to lease the space where the chametz is located. And this form, indexed as E55, you're empowering Einuber and I to act as your agents. You're on behalf of Y&J, you're empowering Einuber and I to act as Y&J's agents to sell the chametz to the non-Jew and to lease the space where the chametz is located. And now here we go. I'm going to hand Rabbi Price a kli. Could be anything. Could be a pocket knife. Could be a watch. Or it could be a pocket square. A purple pocket square, no less. Taking this as a king, listening to this as a king to confirm your intent to make me your shliach. Okay.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Shkoyach.
Thank you.
That's step one. That's just warm up. But again, I didn't buy the chametz. What happened? Nothing happened yet. Now I have the right to sell Y&J's chametz. And now we're going to call up. Yeah, Rabbi.
You said the chametz should be the designated place. How does that work?
Let me just finish. Attached with the power of attorney form, I gave Rabbi Cohen a list of the rooms and locations within the yeshiva where the chametz is.
Okay. Scott. Now that was real. What you saw actually happened, and that's going to work. And next week, we're going to be selling Y&J's chametz based on the power of attorney that you just witnessed happen. That was real. What you're about to see is not real. Step two does happen next week, but we're going to do an early version. As I said before, we have an expert spieler, a fantastic expert spieler. The Purim season by us, the Purim season goes all the way till Pesach. It's my pleasure to call Benny.
Graduate of our wedding day.
You should know that for real, Benny reminded me of the last couple of weeks of a Tish, an eighth grade Tish that I got to join him at 4 years ago when he was in eighth grade. Okay. We're getting to persona here. So this is Benny, but for the moment, he's going to play Christopher Smith. Now, let's just think about what's about to happen. So what I want to do, sell the chametz to Christopher Smith and rent to him all the closets and all the cabinets and all the refrigerator shelves where the chametz is located. Okay, how would I sell chametz to Christopher? Any thoughts? Sign a contract. How do you buy chametz in the store?
Money.
Money, right? Money. What else happens when you go to the store and you buy a bag of pretzels? Two kinyanim happen. Number one, you pay for it. Number two, back in the room. That is true. They will not give you a plastic bag. In the state of New Jersey, very good. But what will they give you? Mr. Cohn, what will they give you?
A receipt.
A receipt, okay. And they'll give you the pretzels. When you buy a bag of pretzels in the store, two things happen. You pay for it, and you walk out with it. You have the pretzels in hand. The poskim discuss, based on the Gemara and Bechoros, which of those two kinyanim works between a Jew and a non-Jew. Do I make the chametz by him paying for it? Or do I make the chametz by my giving it to him? Now, if I just wanted to sell John Brown, or Christopher Brown, if I just wanted to sell Christopher Brown one box of Cheerios, it would be very easy. I say, Christopher, here's a box of Cheerios. He takes it. He pays me for it. We have Kesef, we have Mashiach, and we're good to go. The problem is, can he pay me for it?
Yeah.
Can he take all of the chametz? No. That would mean going around to 1,000 homes and picking up chametz. Christopher doesn't have time for all that. So instead we do a whole bunch of other kinyanim just to cover our bases.
Wow.
So here's what would happen. Maybe you'll stand up because I don't know if the oil in the back can see if you're sitting. Fantastic. So I'm going to sit down, and if you want, there are many, many rabbanim, you should know. 40, 50 rabbanim who gather in Young Israel of Riverdale, Rabbi Mordechai Willig Shul, on Erev Pesach morning. All of us are under the aegis of Rabbi Willig, each selling hundreds of people's chametz to the non-Jew. Here portrayed by our very own Christopher Brown. So I would say, here's what would happen. I'm going to walk in with this whole stack of sheets. All the powers of attorney, one of them is Y&J. I walk in with this stack this long list of everyone who wants to sell the chametz. And there'll be one more sheet, which is an actual contract, which is that I, Tanchum Cohen, am representing numerous people who are interested in selling their chametz to Christopher Brown, and interested in renting the space of chametz to locate to Christopher Brown. Mr. Brown, do you have any quarters on you?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Wow. Does anyone have a quarter to lend to Mr. Brown here? Anyone have a quarter? Give the man a quarter. Come on up. What's your name? Now, the first thing we need to do is figure out how many times am I selling chametz there? Because right now I have 55 people. So that's going to be one pruta for each sale. 2 cents for each sale. 55 times 2 cents is?
110.
110. So if we were doing this for real, Mr. Brown here would be counting out 5 quarters. $1.25. So he's given me at least 2 cents, at least one pruta for each person that I'm representing. I'm representing more than 55, but for now, we're up to 55. So I would sign a contract that says I'm representing 55 people, saying their comments to Mr. Brown. Then I would say to Mr. Brown, are you interested in buying the chametz? He'll say,
absolutely.
Are you interested in leasing the space where the chametz is located?
Yes, I'm a big real estate developer.
Okay, there you go. There you go. So I say, Mr. Brown, would you like, I'm representing 55 people all interested in selling their chametz to you. Would you like to pay me for it?
Yes.
Okay, so Mr. Brown would count out 5 quarters. Give me the 5 quarters. That's kinyan number one. He paid for it. Kinyan number two is that same Kinyan Sudar, but now instead of the rabbi giving, the rabbi is?
Giving.
Well, let's think about it. The chametz is going that way, so the Sudar has to come this way. So Mr. Brown might pull out his pocket knife or his pen and hand it to me. Kinyan number two. Okay. Kinyan number three, in many industries, a handshake makes the deal. Okay, shake on it. What else is going to happen? We're not done yet. Now I say to Mr. Brown, I want these 55 people want to lease their closets to you. Are you interested in that?
Yes, I'd like to know.
Okay. So, Mr., you're going to give me a Kenyan Kesef for that? He just rented with more another 5 quarters. And, once again, a Kenyan Suter on the rental. And a handshake on the rental. And now, some of you may remember from Mishnah's Kiddushin, the two other ways of making things yours are either, if things end up in your backyard, they can become yours. We call that Kinyan Chatzar. So by renting the space, not only, you said before, the space is the cause of the non-Jews, it's not in my property, but by renting him the space, that's a fourth way that the chametz became his, is through Kinyan Chatzar. The chametz is not located in his backyard. Number five, the Mishnah tells me in Kiddushin, that real estate is so important, land is so important, that if I do a kinyan to make land yours, I could sell you a house and the car is included. So I just rented him a closet and the chametz was included. Call that kinyan agav. How many kinyan do we have so far to make the chametz, Mr. Brown's? So far, how many?
Five.
What were they? Number one was kesef, he paid for it. Number two was kinyan sudar. Number three was a handshake, kiyaskaf. Number four, the chametz became his because the space is his, chatzer. Number five, the chametz became his, it traveled to him together with the space, kinyan agav. The chametz was riding on the rental of the land. And finally, the sixth and final kinyan that we do is a shtar. We have a signed document. I have all the documents the people want to sell, and all the powers of attorney, and the list of where all the chametz is in Y&J, and where the chametz is in Zimbabwe, and in Cleveland, and in Bergenfield, and New Milford, everywhere else the chametz might be. I have a signed contract on top, and I say in front of witnesses, Adam, we need two people who are not related to anyone who I'm selling for. You get those to Adam. I say, Mr. Brown, Kinyan Shtar on the rental, Kinyan Shtar on the chametz. We have just fully, thoroughly conveyed the chametz to Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown, thank you so much. You can now go back to being back. I want to close with the following. Two things, one practical and one bigger. I told you we would talk about the what, the how, and the why. So in terms of the what, we're getting rid of the chametz. The how, you just watch two steps. The first step of the how happens in shul, where individual Jews give the rabbi the authority to act for them. You just saw a play, a spiel of step two, where the rabbi actually sells Jews' chametz to the non-Jew. One more detail, how do you eat the chametz after Pesach? So he only paid me 2 cents per each person's chametz, but the chametz is worth hundreds or thousands of dollars. It said $2,032. So everything else was due in 10 days. So right after Pesach is over, Mr. Brown comes back to Rabbi Willig, whichever Rav was handling it, and says, we could renegotiate. You can either pay me the full amount, the rabbi says, the millions of dollars, or I'll buy it back at a premium. Typically, most of the time, the non-Jew is interested in buying back. And that's why your Rabbanu will all announce in shul on the last day of Pesach. If, in case the non-Jew we sold the chametz to doesn't want to sell it back, you'll get a phone call within a half hour, an hour of Pesach being over. If you don't get a phone call, you can assume that the buyback went well, and we're all good. The chametz is once again yours. You cannot eat your chametz the moment you make Havdalah. Gotta give it another 45 minutes, 10 hour, until the Rav has successfully rebought your chametz on your behalf. And one last point, and that is the why. What's this all about? What's this all about? HaTorah wants us not only to not eat chametz on Pesach, but to not own chametz on Pesach. Which again, small amounts of chametz, you can destroy it. And everyone will destroy, burn the last bit of chametz that you own. After everything else is sold, the last bit of chametz is going to be burned. But why? So Tosfos and the Ran say at the beginning of Pesachim, eating chametz on Pesach is so severe that the Torah itself made a gzeira. Usually gzeiras are made by the Rabbanim. The Torah itself made a gzeira. We don't want it to own chametz. Get the chametz out so that you won't come to eat it. But what's so important about not eating chametz? Yeah, what do you say? What's your name? Binyamin. What do you say, Binyamin?
I have a different point from before.
Okay, so let's swing back afterwards. I'm getting the two minute warning here. What's so bad about eating chametz?
It's like the Yetzer Hara.
Oh.
Doesn't want you to
like
the chametz is like
Yetzer Hara. Oh, so there's a lot going on with chametz. Chametz is a symbol for the Yetzer Hara. Chametz is a symbol for the fake and the puffery inside. Chametz is a symbol for so many things. Yeah, what's your name? Shlomo, what do you say? You get chametz. Chametz is so easy. You eat chametz on Pesach, you get chametz. What's the deal with chametz? The Ramban says, I'll tell you what it's about. Yetzias Mitzrayim. You might wonder, if all Hashem wanted to do the Makos is to get us out of Mitzrayim, why did it take 10 tribes? Was HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chas V'Shalom batting 100? God always bats 1,000. It took 10 Makos to get us out? Says the Ramban, the point of the Makos was just to get us out. Point of the Makos was to teach us everything. The point of the Makos was to show us that Kodesh Baruch Hu exists out there and here, involved in our lives, knows what we're up to, cares about us, manages our lives. That was very, very clear throughout the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim. How are you and I going to know about that? Yetzias Mitzrayim happened well over 3,000 years ago. You know what you and I know about Yetzias Mitzrayim? Because there are so many mitzvahs all year long, and especially on Pesach, that keep the memory of Yetzias Mitzrayim alive. 100 generations ago, 100 times from Pesach till now, a father told his son about Yetzias Mitzrayim. A parent told Shai about Yetzias Mitzrayim 100 times over and over and over until it finally got to us. Taking Pesach seriously is what has kept the memory of Yetzias Mitzrayim alive, and what has kept that amunah, and that seeing Hashem in our lives alive, especially through Pesach. That's why the matzah is so important. That's why the Seder is so important. That's why we take chametz so seriously. That's why we take preparing for Pesach so seriously. I want to wish you a chakashiv sameach. And may you grow in this yeshiva every day. And may you grow close to Kadosh Baruch Hu from Pesach to Pesach. Hever, thank you so much. Thank you, Rabbi Price. Thank you, Rabbi Bernstein. Shkoyach.
Thank you very much.